Like, we have something going here. We're building something special, and, you know, you can see it from the outside and inside. It's even more beautiful.
The point of having a bunch of Ferraris and keep them in the garage, you know, like, take them out to the track, so.
Once a Giant, always a Giant. For me, it's only a Giant.
Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of All In with Art Stapleton, a New York Giants podcast brought to you by NorthJersey.com and The Record. I'm your host, Art Stapleton, and the negotiating period is upon us. Free agency is here, and I wanted to bring in someone who knows about the business of football, knows about football as his business, and before I keep waiting any longer, Justin Pugh, 11-year NFL veteran, all-around nice guy. I don't know if you ever won the Good Guy Award, but you certainly should have in the Giants locker room. Justin, you were straight off the couch during the season. Now you're straight out of bed out there in Arizona, so I appreciate you joining me.
Yeah, you know, I just had a – I appreciate you having me on, Art, first off. And second off, I just had a daughter. She's 7 weeks old.
Yep.
We had talked about it during the season. So she gets up at – in an hour from right now. So I figure, you know what, let me hop on the podcast before Princess Joey wakes up and we start the day.
Nice. Nice. Well, I chose the orange shirt for you, for your Syracuse orange, and away we go. I've known you since you walked into the NFL. So it's always nice. And like I said, you coming back around for this year with the Giants, it was certainly an experience. We could get into a little bit of that. You've talked a lot about that, but what's next for Justin Pugh is certainly coming up. But your future, you've obviously worn several hats. And what I wanted to talk to you about is I mentioned the business of football. This is the time where, you know, a lot of younger players and even older players are introduced to what the business of football really is. And it's kind of hard to get an education as to what transpires this time of year. And I know from following you on social media, from knowing you and having conversations with you, it's very important to you. And it's something that you've educated yourself. Your podcast, Net Worth with Justin Pugh, is a great listen. If you haven't listen to that or subscribe to that, make sure you head out and get a subscription to that for the work that Justin does, and it's going to continue to do. It's really an education, and I think from a fan's perspective, you know what's on the surface, but I think Justin kind of has a very good way of kind of talking about some intricate details, but also relating them to the average fan and the average person to understand it. So that's why I wanted to talk to Justin about this as well. The negotiating period in the NFL, Justin, you became a free agent, I think it was in 17, right? Was that the first year?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, Jerry Reese had just got let go. Ben McAdoo had just gotten let go. Dave Gettleman came in and, you know, I was in talks with the Giants to secure the forever contract, to sign a 5-year deal, be a Giant for the rest of my career. And it didn't go the way I thought it would go. And that was my first introduction to the business of football.
So this negotiating period comes up, and obviously people think, agents are talking to teams. Teams are talking to agents. They don't wait until the negotiating period. There is some truth to that, obviously. You know, you talk to an agent about one player, and then the agent kind of spreads the word about several other players. But from a player's perspective, take me inside. Now, obviously, you're still going through it, but you're in a different stage of your career. We could talk about that in a little bit. What do people need to know about this time when, you know, the clock strikes noon today, East Coast time, and all of a sudden the free agency, you know, frenzy, I guess you'd call it, triggers? From a player's perspective, for you, has it always been the same, or have your years in this league kind of taught you how to handle this whole situation?
Yeah, so this is my third time going through free agency. There's different phases that guys are at in their careers. There's a guy that's waiting for the big deal. There's a guy that's waiting for the next deal. There's a guy that's just waiting for any deal. And I think you really can break them up into tranches. And I'll start with the first experience that I went through. It was a guy that was waiting on, you know, the life-changing deal. I had moved to Florida. I was living and training in Florida in 2017. And I guess it was 2000, 18 offseason. And, you know, I'm waiting for the Giants. We're trying to negotiate a deal. And I get to the point where Dave Gettleman hasn't even contacted my agent. They haven't talked. So I know I wasn't going back to the Giants. And, you know, that's a bitter pill to swallow. But I've talked about this at length. You know, it's a business. A GM gets put in and it's a role that he's getting paid to do. And he wants to build a team his certain way. Every GM is not going to hit on every player. It's just the nature of the beast. You can look across the board. And if you hit on enough, you'll keep your job. And if you don't hit on enough and your strategy doesn't work out, you'll be let go. And there's plenty of examples. And Dave Gettleman isn't a guy that I have any ill will towards. He just was doing his job. And it was ended up being one of the best things that could have ever happened to me. So free agency starts. I'm thinking I'm going to sign this monster contract. I've been one of the most productive offensive linemen in the league for the last few years. I had an injury the previous season, but Andrew Norwell had just signed for $12 million a year. And I was like, all right, well, he's played, no offense to Andrew, he'd only played one or two seasons at the time where he was still a young guy, but the Panthers had just gone to the Super Bowl. And when he signed his deal for $12 million a year, I'm thinking, all right, well, at least I'm going to be in that conversation. Then Ryan Jensen signed. And then I was like, all right, Ryan Jensen, he had just played one season as well. I'm like, all these, I have 5 years of tape out there. I played tackle, I've played guard. And then there was not a lot of teams that came calling. And it went back to the point of, you know, I had an injury. Regardless if I had played 5 years and always been a starter and always did what the team asked me to do and always put the team first, when you get into free agency, you find out like, yeah, that mattered to the Giants. That mattered to Jerry Reese. That mattered to Ben McAdoo. It didn't matter to anybody else in football. And when I got to the Cardinals, obviously still got a great deal, but it wasn't what I thought I was going to get. And that's, you know, very first world problems is what they say. And my deal came together 4 or 5 days into free agency. So there was no, I had a deal in place and the second free agency started, it got announced. So it was humbling for me to go through that. You know, it's 100% first world problems. I'm not asking for anyone to feel bad for the situation, but it exposed me to what is out there. And that really changed my mindset because most teams have the saying once a Giant, always a Giant. Once a Cardinal, always a Cardinal. And it's a business. At the end of the day, we're paid to go out there and put a product on the field, to entertain the fans, to put people in the seats, to have eyeballs on the TV. And that's what it comes down to. But even as I've gone on this podcasting journey, I've learned even more about free agency and maybe the lack of expectations that should come with free agency. To kind of, hey, everyone needs to calm down a little bit. Your team's not going to be fixed or rebuilt overnight through free agency.
What have you learned? What is the biggest lesson you've learned from your first experience to free agency till now? I mean, if a younger player in the locker room comes up to you and says, hey, Justin, what do I need to know? Like you said, there are three different stages and maybe even more if you continue to run them down. But what's the biggest lesson you would say to people about what NFL free agency is like and what you would tell Justin Pugh back in 2018 that you didn't know or appreciate back then?
Patience. I think patience is a key because you're texting your agent who's calling, who's doing this. You bring your agent in for a specific reason. And that specific reason is to get you the most money possible, get you into the best situation that they can. And, you know, I think the first day of free agency, I was like, all right, where are we going? Like within at 12 o'clock, we should have a team ready to go and be signed up. And I think there is a realization of where you fall in the pecking order. So you look at your position group and there's going to be some guys realizing you may not play a premium position. You know, I'm not a left tackle. I'm a guard. So there's some left tackles that are maybe going to get a deal done first or be the priority for teams. So I really think it's just having that patience and having that wherewithal. And then the second part is it's always, and it's going to sound crazy now because, you know, my podcast is called Net Worth. And I just mentioned the dollars.
Yep.
It's not always about the money. The situation matters almost as much as the money. So you go to a place that is going to put you in a position to win. Maybe you sign a 1-year deal where it's a prove it deal. There's so many things that go into weighing it. It just isn't dollars and cents. I took the approach of like, let me secure my family for life, and go to the team that was just finished. You know, we were worse in the NFL at the time when I signed with the Arizona Cardinals. And, that's a tougher situation to put yourself into, because when you're you're not going to come in and be the last piece. If a team is going to finish last in the NFL, you're not really going to make, you know, all the difference. There's a buildup. And the Cardinals actually went through that during my time, getting back to the playoffs with Kyler Murray. But it's almost, it's an uphill battle. So if I would have gone to maybe a playoff contender and signed a one-year deal, maybe I'm back at the negotiating table a year later, but I have a championship ring on, and now all of a sudden teams overpay for that accolade.
How hard is it to have that perspective, knowing that, you know, it's funny, Casey Kreider is going to sign his 9th one-year deal. And I know he's a long snapper, but he's one of the best in the league. He's consistent. He's, you know, knock on wood, healthy, you know, durable. And he's going to come back to the Giants for, you know, at this point, he's, you know, I think he's tied for, he and Graham Gano are like the fifth longest tenured guys. And they got here in 2020, depending on how things happen in the free agent market. I mean, how do you weigh that idea? Now an older Justin Pugh, obviously you might not have a choice, or you do have a choice. You have more control as to what you're willing to accept. But the idea, like you said, I mean, how do you know when it's time to take the prove it deal and say, I'm going to put my faith in myself that the following year I'm going to be back at the table, and then I'm going to be able to negotiate much more?
Well, sometimes there's mechanisms, and we see this with Saquon Barkley with the tag, that the player doesn't have an option. They're going to approve it year no matter what happens. Right. There's opportunities where you may not have had the year you thought you would, and you have to sign a prove it deal. If you have to sign a prove it deal, do it on a team that's going to win. Don't do it on a team that's not. I mean, it depends on where you're at financially. If you were a first round, second round pick, you've made a little bit more money, you can afford to take that chance. But again, it's all a risk reward analysis. You, your family, your agent have to figure that out, where you sit in the landscape. So I think there is some uniqueness to that. Like a guy like Casey Kreider, unfortunately, plays a position where there's only one guy on the team. There is no backup long snapper. So to lock in and make sure you're getting a deal done makes a ton of sense. The team, for the most part, unless you're going to break the bank and break the record for long snapper contracts, may not prorate that deal out because the dollars aren't big enough that they need to prorate any of the contract. So that makes a ton of sense that Casey has done that. I think Jesse Armstead, another Giants great, I always remember him talking about always signing one-year deals. I always am like, Jesse, you should have cashed in on one of them. But he's like always coming back and resetting the market. That was always a goal of his. And I think that's something that was an interesting perspective. Not everyone approaches it from the same way.
Have you always been, I know you know, from, like I said, the conversations and just listening to you talk, listening to your podcast, you know, you have this perspective now that's gained. It seems like, you know, you're not doing it because you don't have an interest in it. You obviously have a vested interest in the business and, you know, then, like you said, net worth and what players need to understand. But has that been something that you've always been interested in, or has it just been through the years and what you've gone through that you've kind of taken an interest to it? Like when you were in Syracuse coming into the league, is that something that you even thought about, or was it something that's developed?
I was a finance major at Syracuse, so I always had thought about getting into the wealth management side. I had two uncles that were in the business. My whole goal for starting Net Worth was to show guys what life after football looks like, that there is a path to success. And when I say success, there's many different things. I'm having a guy on, Alejandro Villanueva at some point, that is a farmer now. I'm having Cassius Marsh on, who does trading cards. I'm having JC Treader, who became the president of our union. And so a bunch of different guys, and showing all these different paths, that there is no one way to have success post-career. And for me, I always come back to the dollars. The guys can go do all these things if they were prudent with their money while playing. So there's this cash flow issue that players run into, and there's these crazy stats, and some stats say 70% of some players go broke. And what is broke? I can't even tell you what broke is. Has zero, you file bankruptcy, or you can't pay your bills, or you have to change lifestyle, because it's a very loosely used term. So I don't really know what the real percentage of guys go broke is. My whole goal is to keep as much cash in guys' pocket as possible so they can continue to live whatever life they're living, continue to help however many people they're helping. That's where people lose sight. NFL players have a ecosystem around them, and they want to say that people throw out all these terms of who they are, hanger-oners, or they're not. A lot of time it's friends, it's family, it's people that helped you get to where you're at. You've been the one that has made it and has a chance to change the trajectory of your family and your extended family. And that's how guys get in trouble a lot of times. They have these bills they have to pay every month, and they're used to making X dollars. So say you're making $1 million a year, your lifestyle jumps up to $1 million a year. Well, the average NFL career is less than 2.5. So after 2.5 years, you're at zero on income, but your lifestyle is still here. And that difference is how a lot of guys go broke. And my goal is to make this difference as small as possible, find ways for guys to keep as much money in their pockets as possible and take care of the ones they love. So free agency is one of the biggest tools for them to increase those odds of them being successful. So it's always been my goal to see how the teams play with cap, cash spend, how they use voided years, how you can help negotiate your contract. Like this year, and we'll talk about this probably in a second, I was instrumental in negotiating my own contract with Joe Shane and the Giants brass this last year. So it's been a fun run.
Let's talk about that. Let's get into that and your situation right now and how that really factors into all these lessons that you've learned, because you talked a lot last year about what you wanted and what you were coming back from. You're coming back from the knee surgery. So what was that like to finally make that call to be able to say, okay, I'm going to do this?
Yeah, so it started, you know, got married, went on my honeymoon last offseason, thought I was retiring. I found out my wife's pregnant. So like we're riding on, you know, we're riding a high. And eventually that itch starts to roll around of like, I still can do this. People don't think I can play anymore, coming off ACL. And then I started thinking about where I would want to play. And teams are like, oh, you can come back on our practice squad. You know, August rolls around, a couple of teams had some injuries. Teams reach out and they're like, hey, you could come back on our practice squad. But the entire time I was planting seeds with the New York Giants. And I was doing so through shows like this, talking to guys like you, Art. Right. I mean, Pat Leonard was a show that I went on that really kind of started to spark the conversation even more. And a bunch of teams reached out. Not that they were like trying to throw money at me. They said, hey, come be on our practice squad. There's a new, you know, with the new CBA rules changes after COVID, veterans can go on the practice squad.
Right.
Which I just was at our union meetings and I was standing on the table trying to, you know, say these are good things for veterans to have. Now, yes, teams can use it to your disadvantage. But in my situation, I came to the Giants and said, hey, I'm going to do a few things on the field. I'm going to do a few things off the field. I'm going to come in and be a leader. I'm going to be a mouthpiece for the offensive line room. I'm going to take some heat off guys because I like to talk, so they won't have to. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to play great football for you. Now, was it the best football of my career? No. But I came into a situation where I was thrown out there to the left tackle and went out there and battled. And I think I did pretty damn good for the circumstances that I was in, to not having a full offseason to train and learning the playbook and playing 2 days after being there. So I did everything that I said I was going to do. And then when it came time to the contract, I said, now once I prove that I'm going to do X, Y, Z on and off the field for the team, now we're going to get a real contract done. I said, I will come and I'll be on the practice squad to start. I'll prove to you that I'm healthy. I'll give you a call-up game where I go and play in a game to make sure that practice and the game all match up. But then I want a real contract after that. And that's where we got to. I went out there and played in the Bills game. And the next day I started talking to Joe Shane and we're negotiating my deal up until like the 11th hour on Tuesday. And we finally got it done. I was actually involved in the calls. I was on the calls. I was actually at a friend's office in New York City, Rockefeller Family Office, and I was negotiating the deal in one of their conference rooms on the phone with Joe Shane, Ed Triggs, Kevin Abrams.
Now, what was important? Because, you know, we talked in the locker room, and the moment you got there, you talked to a bunch of guys that have known you for forever. For you, you know, the surface perspective is just the idea of, oh, well, Justin just wants more money. You know, he just wants the most money that he can get out of the Giants in that situation. But when you're negotiating that contract, what was most important to you? I know you mentioned several times the idea of respect, the idea that you wanted to kind of be shown the respect of what you did and how you got to where you were. But when you're negotiating that, how do you know when to push, when to pull back? You know, what did it ever get to that? Like you said, on that 11th hour on that Tuesday?
It did. Because when I came back and I played in that Bills game and I realized, all right, like I'm going to have to go out there and play left tackle going forward. And, you know, the whole objective was to come back to the Giants. I think instead of retiring as a Giant and showing up one day and just putting on I didn't deserve that. I didn't win a Super Bowl for the Giants. Like, what's the one way that I can come back and actually help the team that I am a fan of and that drafted me and that gave me my shot? And I'm going to be back to them. And in that market, once I'm retired, is to go back and actually help that team. So after the Buffalo Bills game, you know, I felt like if I left the Giants after that one game, and that was like the one game I came back for, like I could have gone out like that. I would have felt like I came back and did my duty to the organization and helped. I said to Joe, Joe Shane, GM of the Giants, I said, hey, if you want me to continue to do this, you just saw what I did for you. Let's make this deal happen. And at minimum risk to the organization, I wanted, like, instead of having the veteran minimum prorated signing bonus, I said, give me some no guarantees. Give me some bonus, some incentives that I can hit that if I end up playing, I can make some money. And I thought that was a fair deal for everyone involved. The Giants took no risk bringing me in. The only risk was if I ended up misrepresenting the team in terms of things I said or messed up the continuity of the room. That was the risk. And I felt pretty good that I wouldn't do that. And throughout the season, you know, I proved that I was able to help. But I think the one thing was it was all incentives. If I didn't play, if I didn't go out there and put the pads on and play on Sundays and play meaningful snaps and someone else was there to replace me, if there was someone that was better that could have replaced me, they would have. They weren't doing me any charity. I was giving us the best chance to go win games. And the crazy thing was, everyone wants to say the season was a failure. We didn't make the playoffs. We didn't win a Super Bowl. It was. But like, we were a lot closer than people think. The Green Bay Packers made the playoffs and upset a few teams. We were very close to making the playoffs as well. We beat the Green Bay Packers. So I don't think people realize how quickly you can get in the conversation of the playoffs and how quickly you can be out of it, because we were in it for a few weeks and everyone was riding a high and then it all came crashing down. But you look back at the Jets, the Bills games, we easily could have made the playoffs last year.
There had to be a moment where you guys looked at, where you personally looked at, because you follow the Giants, like you said, before you signed. So, you know, it's in October when, you know, you guys finally, you got on the field in Buffalo and that whole thing. But to look at how the injuries and what happened at quarterback, I mean, look, the reality is that, you know, no one expected Tommy DeVito to be starting in the NFL last year. I mean, I don't even know if Tommy DeVito expected to be Tommy DeVito expected to be starting.
Exactly. You know how Tommy is.
But, you know, just the idea, I mean, since you've had the time now off of that season, now granted, like you said, 6-11, you didn't make the playoffs. You know, you're not going to try to blow it up to where it really wasn't, you know, but to how that team competed, do you have an appreciation for how quickly it could have gone into the tank? Because you've been around here when seasons did go into the tank. I mean, how close was it that, you know, if things didn't turn around the way you did, that you guys would have been staring at a December that, you know, I'm sure you want to forget from back in, you know, 2017.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen how quickly when a team gives up on a season, and not just a Giants team, a Cardinals team that I was on as well, where the season was lost and guys are ready to move on, they're ready to get to the next season. And that wasn't what happened in New York this year. Guys went out there and fought every single game. I think you look at the last game of the season when we go out and fight against the Philadelphia Eagles. We had the Rams down to the wire. The NFL is a lot of, I don't want to say mediocrity. There's some teams that are really, really good, and you know they're going to make a run in the playoffs. And there's some teams that you know that, you know, they get in the playoffs, but odds are they aren't going to make anything happen. And I never felt like we were out of a game. I never felt like we were – and to say that when we were 6-11 is a crazy statement. I know that people I'll probably catch some slack for that. But I look at every single game that we went into thinking that we had a chance to just go out there and battle, and we did. Now we got beat bad. We got beat bad by the Raiders. We got beat bad by Dallas. We got beat bad by New Orleans. But we had a, if you look back at some of those ones, we easily could have had three more wins, and that's something that I'll be proud of, that we went out there and battled. And in a year that most fans will throw out and they'll call it meaningless, I'll always hold on to it. I'm hoping that what we did was we helped set and build off the foundation from the playoff year before, and the Giants go on and do some great things going forward.
So tell me where your head's at right now. Just the idea of, you know, free agency, like we said, is beginning, negotiating period. You talk about being patient. You know, you're in a point in your life. You mentioned your daughter, your wife. You guys are in Arizona now, but, you know, you want to relocate, I would imagine, eventually to the East Coast, whether it's, you know, the New York area, or you mentioned Florida earlier. How do you look at this now? I mean, the Giants are expected to be players right out of the gates for your position. I mean, you hear the idea that guards in the NFL now, all of a sudden, it seems like that's the deepest position in free agency right now, and there's going to be some big money going to that position. How do you approach it now over the next couple days, or whether it's weeks? In your mind, what's the timetable here? And is it still in your mind that if you're going to play, you want to play for the Giants again, or is there a chance that, you know, you may look at another deal somewhere else?
Look, I love the Giants, and I think getting a deal done with the Giants is always the number one priority for me. Like you said, there's some they can't go into a season like, oh, Justin Pugh's the answer for the next few years at guard. That would be foolish. I think there's a lot of great players out there. You have Michael Owenu from the Patriots. You have Jonah Jackson from the Detroit Lions. It all shakes out on how you want to build out your roster. I think with Evan, where he's going to be at next year, you know, if he's at right tackle, if you think you need some competition in the tackle room, you bring in a tackle. There's a lot of different pieces to that puzzle. There's the draft that's very deep. I mean, I'm doing a show with Colt McCoy and AQ Shipley next week about the draft and about some of the offensive linemen. So I won't give away any of that just yet, but there's some talent in the draft as well. So I think you go across the board. What I will say about free agency, and then specifically, I mean, I guess circling back to my own free agency.
Yep.
I'm in a unique position where I could play, and I'm everyone knows exactly what I'm going to do and what I'm going to bring to the table. And I think there's more to it than just the play on the field. And then there's, you know, the money side. I'm not going to be breaking the bank. And I said after the season, like, a deal that I couldn't turn down, if fans were like, Pugh's delusional if he thinks he's going to have a payday. That's not what I'm talking about. I said deal that I can't turn down for me personally. Like, that's an internal number that I would play for. So I think that's something that, you know, I would be foolish if I wouldn't approach other teams that are looking to bring in a guy that has leadership qualities like I do, that will help build the room, that will help, you know, build a foundation. And that's where I think a lot of times people get lost. You bring in a bunch of guys. When you go to free agency, they're mercenaries. So don't get it twisted. No one's coming to play for the New York Giants. Well, I guess I did last year, but I'm in year 11. It was a unique position. When a guy has a chance to break the bank and get that life-changing contract, most of the time they are going to the highest bidder. So don't anyone think that anything otherwise is happening. And, statistics have shown that typically when you go to free agency, you have to overpay for players. So when you get that guy and he signs this massive contract and all these expectations come with it, just realize that the Giants are probably bidding against 3, 4, 5, 6 other teams. And the reason they have to give him that much money is because he has leverage. And that is what this game is all about, is leverage. And right now the players will have it. And a lot of times you don't see those marquee players at the premium positions hit free agency. You have Tyron Smith, who's going to free agency this year, but he's in year 12, coming off some injuries. There's a reason why teams let some of these players go, is because they know what they have. And there's a reason why they decided this guy is the one we're going to let walk in free agency. So people get very excited. And as a player, I'm like, oh, the Giants are letting me go. Well, there's a reason the Giants let me go the first time. They didn't think that I was, you know, going to be that marquee player for them going forward. It's part of the business.
You were a homegrown player who got let go. Now fans look at it now, when you mentioned Saquon earlier and Xavier McKinney, the same way, the idea of what does it take to let a homegrown player go, and how hard is that, not just for the player, but for the organization? You're a guy who's been in this league more than a decade. Do you think most guys appreciate the business aspect of it, or is there still that loyalty aspect for a lot of guys, the idea of how can my team not want me to be here? And is it always the team? Can it also be the player? And it's no disrespect to the Giants per se, but sometimes players want to see what's out there. You need a change of scenery. You need to do something best for yourself. How do you kind of, you know, negotiate that in your head as far as emotions go for a guy who's been in this league?
Yeah, you look at Xavier, you look at Saquon, they're definitely hurt. I mean, there's no question about it. I know Saquon wants to be a Giant. I don't know X as well. Got to meet him a little bit this year, but defensively, you know, I was kind of focusing on the offensive line and the offense. But there's definitely some emotions there. But I think emotions settle once the business starts to creep into the situation. We start playing this game as players for the love of the game. We play for free. We're playing. You're playing in the backyard with your friends, and you're playing in high school, then you're playing in college. Up until recently, we were playing in college for free as well. Or no, for our education. That's right. What everyone, you right. know, for our education.
You should just be happy that you got a scholarship to go into Syracuse, right?
Exactly. While everyone else profits from the TV money. But that's a whole nother conversation for another day. But at the core of what football is, we play for the competition. We play for our brothers. We play for the ability to prove that we're the best. So when you come into a situation where you get drafted, you think this is going to last forever. And I always use this analogy. It's, you know, think about your high school girlfriend, or think about your junior high. You thought it was going to last forever. You met this girl when you were 6 years old in first grade, and that was your first ever girlfriend. And you're like, oh, I'm going to marry her, mom. And then you end up, life happens, and she goes to the prom with somebody else, and you realize that you have to, you know, move on in life. And that's where I think free agency really hits home for guys. They just found out that, their girlfriend's dancing with somebody else at the prom, and they have to go find another date. And sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes that hurts. So that's where some players are at right now. And I think, unfortunately, if you don't play one of the four positions that every team values, they may have you test the market. It's an open market. Unfortunately, the running back market, the guard market is starting to turn. But even before, when I hit free agency, people were value left tackles. Now they're starting to value right tackles like left tackles. Now they're starting to value guards. But there's other positions where you can just see the analytics that they're going to let guys test the market. Linebacker is one of them. Running back is one of them. And you can see with all the running backs that are in free agency right now, the teams are basically saying, hey, all of you guys go test the market. If there's someone out there willing to pay you more, go get it. And I think that's great for a guy like Saquon, because he brings – some unique aspects to it. He's a franchise player. He's a marquee name. He's selling jerseys. He's putting, you know, eyes on the team. So there's more to it than just him playing running back. But I think the Giants were like, hey, go see what else is out there. I think Saquon ultimately ends up back in New York. It's just my feeling. I think he goes and sees what the market is. And he's like, if I'm going to take this anywhere else, I'm taking it in New York City. And it's the fortunate and unfortunate thing. I think it's good for Saquon, because if there's a team willing to overpay him, I think he's the first guy on the list that a team is going to overpay. Right. And then at safety, you know, unfortunately, cornerbacks get more of the dollars their way than the safeties have. I mean, you looked at a lot of the safety market. Don't get me wrong. A lot of those guys are getting paid, but not as much as like a lockdown corner. So it's just like position versatility. I went through it. I'm like, oh, I can play tackle and guard. I'll get paid like a guard. No, you're a guard, and we're going to pay you like a guard. So it's just, you know, the nature of the business, and guys will see that. You look at the age. I think X is 24 years old. I think that's, yep. I think that conversation had to get to the 11th hour as well. And there probably were a few things. Maybe he wanted a fully guaranteed contract, and the Giants weren't willing to give that. So if a team's desperate enough, they'll pay for it. But a lot of times, it's good for both player and team to go test the market.
Question about that has come up with Saquon and Zay, the idea of, you know, being a Giant and going to sign with the Eagles or ending up in Dallas. When you're a player, how aware are you? And I know you, like you said, you've been through different stages of your career now. And, you know, you were an involved guy. You heard a lot. You know, you were a target back in 17 and 18 when you were leaving, the idea of, you know, the struggles of the team and, you know, you were first round pick and all that stuff. How conscious were you of, well, if I do this, you know, fans may look at me differently, the place that I want to be? Or does that not factor into decisions as far as where you're going next?
It does. I mean, for me personally, it did. I knew that. What I will say is, what contract are we talking about here? If it's life-changing money and the Eagles are giving Saquon the best deal, it'd be hard to imagine him not taking it. I don't think the Eagles will offer him that deal. It's just, I don't think that that's how Howie builds that team. He always brings in running backs. You look at Swift. He let Miles Sanders walk in free agency. I think he goes for strength in numbers of that position. It's just how the Eagles have always operated. Now, safety, they've always brought in. I mean, they brought in Kevin Byard, but if they're not going to pay Kevin Byard, they're probably not going to. I mean, I don't see them going out and like breaking the market at safety either. The Eagles have always focused on defensive and offensive line, obviously quarterback as well and receiver. But there's definitely a notion there. Look, the Eagles reached out to me last offseason and they pitched me on, hey, you can come win a Super Bowl with us, take the veteran minimum deal and come back to Philadelphia. And I thought about it. And I was just like, man, that would just completely tarnish. And I want to say tarnish is the right word. The Giants fans would never have accepted me back in New York City. Maybe but that's me as Justin Pugh, not even a full-time, you know, face of the franchise guy. If Saquon went to Philadelphia, the fans would definitely let him hear it. I think there'd be a lot of upset fans and the fans pour so much into it. They invest in us as players, and they would feel betrayed if he went down the turnpike to the Eagles.
And it's pretty crazy too, because let's talk business. I mean, look, the reality is he has every right to go where he wants to go. And, you know, if someone's going to give him a contract that's best for his family, like you said, that life-changing money, that's the difference here. You're talking about somebody, if they're going to give him, you know, $15, $16 million a year and they're going to blow him out of the water, well, then you'll just have to, you know, find a way to deal with it and kind of make peace when the career's over and come back, you know, to the Giants fans, that kind of thing. Listen, I wanted to have some fun with you before we go. I know you've got the princess that's going to be waking up very soon, so I appreciate you giving me the time at this point. I wanted to talk fun-wise. We used to do this when we started the podcast. Just some quick questions at the end. Teammates, Giants teammates, you can go NFL. Just fun questions. Like, you know, you're stuck in an elevator. Who out of your teammates that you've played with could you say, you know what, I want these two guys with me because I can deal with it. The idea that we can get through, you know, 8 hours, that kind of thing. And then one person that you just off the bat playfully, I could never be stuck in an elevator with this guy for more than 10 minutes.
Oh, all right. Guys I'd want to be stuck in an elevator with, I would say Zach Diassi, you know, long snapper, giant, great. As a guy I want to be stuck in there with. And then recently I just played golf with Justin Tuck. So I would go Zach Diassi, Justin Tuck, start picking their brains for life after football. It's like, hey guys, how are you able to, you know, manage playing these Hall of Fame careers? And then what did you do post-career? So those probably be two guys that I would choose. Someone that I wouldn't want to have in the elevator with me. Oof. A defensive lineman. I don't know who that would be. I've had my battles with some of the guys throughout the years. I still love my defensive lineman, but you know, we would start arguing about whatever it was. So I don't know who, but I know a position group, defensive tackles. I wouldn't have one of those guys.
In your time in New York and, you know, out and about, and I know you weren't necessarily a club scene guy, or at least I didn't see you as a club scene guy, but is there one moment that, you know, you were struck with a celebrity that you were surprised that, you know, either they knew you or that it was that kind of exchange that probably wouldn't have happened if you weren't an NFL player?
Yeah, I went to dinner one time, this place Rao's, and it's a, you know, tough to get into Italian restaurant. Everyone owns their table for like the day of the week. So like you own the second Tuesday of every month. So I go there and I'm eating dinner and I see Joe Montana and his family there. And he's wearing a neck brace actually at the time. And we get introduced and he's like, oh, he knew who I was. And I was like, all right, if Joe Montana knows who you are, like you've made it in life. And he's like, he started talking about all the battles that him and the Giants and the Niners used to have back in the day. And that was, I sat down at my table. I'm like, oh, Joe Montana knew who I was, like, to my friends that I was sitting with. So that was a pretty surreal moment.
That's pretty funny.
I'll go with that one. Yeah.
Last thing, and just to kind of bring it all full circle this week, you know, you're looking at it. How will you handle? You've got enough going on at home. You've got the podcast going on, but will you be engaged and try to see, okay, who's ticking off the board? And, you know, if the Giants sign a couple guys, you know, maybe, okay, maybe this means, you know, I'm not going to be going back there. Or if you see that they lose out, is it almost a little, you know, fist bump? All right, maybe Shane will come calling at the end of the week, that kind of thing. Or, you know, how do you handle, as someone who is still involved, you're not looking to retire necessarily. So how do you handle the next week or so, or even 2 weeks? Do you have kind of a plan as to what you're going to do?
I'm definitely not going to be hitting up my agent at 12 o'clock saying who's reaching out, trying to sign us right now. I'm going to let all these young guys go get their money. I'm going to cheer them on. I want them all to break records. The salary cap now is higher than it's ever been. But I want everyone to make sure, wait for the full details of the contract to come out. Let's see the real cash numbers, the real guarantees. The agents pump out all these numbers that end up not being as true as what the contract actually is. So cheering for those guys. I think there's not a player out there that can do what I do in terms of what they can do on the field plus off the field. So it doesn't matter who any team sign. There's always going to be a spot for me if I want to play next year, just in terms of the veteran leadership and helping build the room from within. Offensive line is a position that's unique in the sense that it's five guys coming together as one. You're only as strong as your weakest link. And that goes to the weakest link in the entire building, down to your practice squad, the energy that's brought to the room. And that's something that I think I do better than anybody else in the NFL. There's not a guy that's going to make the room a better place than me. So I think, you know, regardless who the Giants sign, there's other spots on the roster that are of value. And I think that I bring that value. So I hope the Giants go get all the talent they can. I don't want to go back to the Giants and us to go 6-11 again. Let's go, you know, let's go win 11, 12 games, go to the playoffs, you know, get back to where we were at the year before and have a really good year.
Things can obviously change. Last one, August, where's Justin Pugh?
He's either in New York Giants blue looking good at training camp, or he's sitting behind this camera doing some work with the podcasting and getting involved in the media. I'm doing the broadcast boot camp this offseason. Yep. Still working in real estate. So I'll be doing broadcasting on the weekends and I'll be doing real estate during the weekdays. So those are the two places you'll find me.
Justin Pugh, thanks for the 40 minutes that you've given me. I hope everyone enjoyed kind of getting the inside look at free agency and the business of the NFL. Make sure you check out Justin and his podcast, Net Worth. And obviously, he's hitting the broadcasting scene as well. So make sure you check him out wherever he pops up over the next couple months. And hopefully, you know, he will be back in that number 67 in that corner locker in the locker room because, like you said, you've talked about your value. This isn't a guy blowing smoke. This guy has value on and off the field. So I'm glad you're back with the Giants. And however this thing ends up, you'll be with the Giants and back in the New York City area, you know, and raising your family here, you know, and obviously all the best to you and your wife and Princess Joey and getting ready to go on this next chapter.
Art, I appreciate it. You've always been, you know, a voice of reason in the locker room. And this is the other thing that I will say to all the young players and even older players in the NFL, make friends with the people in the media. And Art has been a friend of mine since I got to the Giants. And we've had some great conversations and we've been able to create some great stories because of that. And Art is a mouthpiece to the fans and you get the pulse of the fans better than anyone. So what I will say to all players out there, as I've gotten more involved in the media space, is take a moment to meet those folks in the locker room, because there's a few other guys like Art out there, but there's some, you know, every team has a guy like you, Art, that truly cares about connecting with the fans. So I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on and I'll see you back in New York, either in a jersey or on the street walking my dog. So I'll see you guys soon.
Absolutely. Justin Pugh. And make sure you keep checking in with us. We're going to have shows throughout the week. Negotiating period kicks off at noon. You may be listening to this. It's already begun. But we'll be where Saquon going, where Xavier going, where's Justin Pugh going. We're going to find out all of that with the Giants. So we're all in. We appreciate you being all in. And we'll check you next time.